The Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording.
All right. Well, thanks for coming. I guess it is still this morning, right? I guess I need to update the bio a bit. It's about 25 years I've spent traveling around the world doing research in areas such as geology, paleontology, archaeology, and speleology, which we're going to talk about today, the study of caves. One of the other things that I do is I'm associate professor of Old Testament, specializing in Genesis 1 to 11 at several different Bible colleges. And so when the class comes and we start reading Genesis chapter 1:1, we have Bereshit bara Elohim et hashamayim v'et haaretz. Of course, in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Well, we're going to talk about catastrophic caves. Rethinking the vast, V-A-S-T, no E on the end, okay? Rethinking the vast ages. And so, how many have ever been on a cave tour? Okay, a few of you have been on a cave tour. I went on cave tours literally all over the world, public cave tours, to see what people were being told. Also went on other cave tours where the public wasn't allowed to investigate evidence and things like that. And almost every single cave tour, they point to the layers before you get going, and they say, look at all of these layers. This is Triassic, or this is Jurassic, etc. And these layers were laid down 300 million years ago. Take a look at the fossils, the marine fossils. They live under the ocean. Okay, yeah. And then we continue on, and then they'll get into the stalactites. And we're going to talk a little bit about that stuff here this morning. The reality is it doesn't take long periods of time. It takes the right chemistry and the right physical conditions. If you have the right chemistry and physical conditions, you can form these formations that you see in caves very, very quickly. I want us to start a little bit with biblical history. I'm not going to spend a long time on this, but when we start our thinking from the Bible, we understand that God created everything, Exodus 20:11. It was in 6 days. He rested the seventh, set a pattern for us to work 6 days and rest the seventh. And so if you go through the genealogies in Genesis chapter 5, etc., and you can actually build a chronology, and I've done this. I don't have it here this morning with me. But if you do that, you realize that, wait a minute, according to the Bible, if you just read the Bible for what it says, we're not talking about millions of years, tens of millions of years, hundreds of millions of years, or billions of years. We're talking about thousands of years. And so when we take a look at the evidence around the world, does the evidence that we see around the world fit with what the Bible actually says? And I would contend, yes, it does. Yes, it does. The original creation was recently. And as I said, I'm not going to spend a bunch of time on this. That's another presentation on how we know what the Bible actually says and how long we've actually been here, which I believe is about 6,000 years. If you call up one of the Orthodox Jews in Israel and they ask what year it is, it's around 6,000 year, and you can add AC. I haven't looked it up this year, but it's around 6,000 years after creation. And they've meticulously looked into this. But in the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. Exodus 20:11, for in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested the seventh day. Wherefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and hallowed it, set it apart for the purpose of worshiping him. And so, an overview, Genesis chapter 1, we see that God creates in 6 days. Day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. On day number 6, we see that God creates all the land animals and people, Adam and Eve. And by definition, dinosaurs were land animals, which isn't the talk today. But nevertheless, dinosaurs and people must have lived together just by reading the text of Scripture. And I have an entire presentation, an entire book, showing the evidence that, yes, dinosaurs and people did, in fact, live together. How were caverns carved? So first of all, before we can get these beautiful formations in some of the caves or caverns, not all of them, but in some of these caves, you first have to have the actual cavern, the cave first. Now, there's a slight difference in understanding of what cave means versus what cavern means, but that's okay. We'll just leave that for now. What is the secular model? We'll start with that. Well, let's let National Geographic tell us. The acidic water percolates down into the earth through cracks and fractures and creates a network of passages like an underground plumbing system. The passage widens as more water seeps down, allowing even more water to flow through. Eventually, some of the passages become large enough to earn the distinction of cave. Most of these solutional caves require more than 100,000 years to widen large enough to hold a human. That's what we're told. And it's interesting to note that they will talk about acid that's coming from above, from the top. Now, you can have humic acid in the soil. You can also have carbonic acid. And we're going to take a look at just a touch, a little bit of that chemistry. What's interesting, after it reaches not very far down, what happens when acid reacts with a base? It neutralizes. And so the problem when you have caves that are quite far underground, you got to take elevators sometimes to get down there. There's no way that that acid came from the top. That's just science. There's no way. So something else, I believe, happened. Now, we talk about the worldwide flood caused major geologic activity. And when you take a look at some of the cave experts that have actually looked at this in detail, one of them on our team, Dr. Emil Silvestru, has spent a lot of time researching this, and I spent a little bit of time researching that aspect. And so we have Noah's flood. I want to take a kind of a look at what would have happened during Noah's flood as far as those layers that were laid down, which eventually became the caves, which eventually became the locations where these formations have formed. And so during the flood, and we now know that a vast majority of the layers on the earth to go to the Grand Canyon were laid down as a result of turbidity currents. They're known as turbidites. And that means that these were laid down very, very fast. We've seen this happen in our history. And you end up with massive numbers of feet of sediment occurring in just a number of hours. Nevertheless, so during the flood, we would see layers being laid down, which would eventually become sandstone, siltstone, limestone, dolomite, etc. Psalm 104, verse 6 to 9. Thou hadst covered it with the deep, as with a vesture. The water stood above the mountains. At thy rebuke they fled. At the voice of thy thunder they hastened away. Now, this is a very literal translation, which is why I'm using this. The mountains rose, the valleys sank, under the place which thou hast founded for them. Thou hast set a bound which they may not pass over, that they turn not again to cover the earth. And so the water stood above the mountains. At the rebuke they fled, the mountains rose up. And so here we have, I believe, at the end of the flood, we have the rising up of the mountains. And you can drive through the Rockies, and you'll see these layers, and they're buckled. Some of them are very tightly buckled. Clearly, they didn't buckle after they solidified, technically known as lithified, but they were still soft and pliable. And then we had this event which caused the mountains to rise, caused the layers to bend, and then after that, they turned into rock. So at thy rebuke, we have a compression event, I believe, in Psalm 104, verse 6 to 9. The mountains rose up, and so we see these layers are buckled. Well, what that actually does is it causes some of this water, and in fact, we believe that it was acidic water, a lot of that from the vegetation and things that were buried during the flood. It seems that a lot of these caves were not carved from above, not with carbonic acid and something, humic acid and things like that, but with sulfuric acid. And you can get that type of acid in a flood scenario. Nevertheless, we have this buckling event pushing these, and we end up with these cracks in some of the sediment that infills with probably sulfuric acid, okay? And then eventually after the flood, we have a very high water table. Then the water table eventually drops to where we have these open caverns, these open caves. And so that's how I believe the caves actually form. And then water from the top, yes, dissolving limestone and then reprecipitating in the caves. Most of these caves are calcite, though there are hundreds of different types of mineral deposits found in caves. Calcite are typically the ones we like. They look like crystal and they sparkle and things like that. Now, I mentioned I went on a lot of cave tours just to see what is it that the public's being told. And it seems like they're all reading from the same script. Whether you're over here in the United States, down in the United States, rather, I am a Canadian, by the way, And but I did spend time down there. And across into Europe, in France or in the UK, you're basically told the same story. Oh, look at these layers. The layers are millions of years old. We're gonna touch on that. We're gonna show that that's actually not the case at all. We can actually demonstrate that's not the case. And then they talk about, look at the stalactites. So here's stalactite growth rates according to guides on public cave tours. This was one particular cave I was in, August 13th, 2018. We all huddle waiting for the guide to come, right? And he comes and he says it takes, well, before he asked this question, sorry. Before he makes a statement, he asks a question. Are there any geologists with us today? And I didn't say anything about my interest in geology because I wanted to see what he was going to say. I wanted to see what people were being told. It takes 1,000 years for a stalactite to grow 1 centimeter. Keep that in the back of your minds, and we're going to progress on the tour. Of course, he started with the rocks being 300 million years old. Now, look at this. Look, beautiful stalactites. And he points to this one with his little laser. Okay, this stalactite is 50 centimeters long. Therefore, it took, how long do you think he said? 1,000 per centimeter, 50 centimeters long? 50,000 years to grow. Excuse me, how do you know that? Were there people and scientists observing it over 50,000 years to know it's 50,000 years old? No, but that's what people are being told. And anybody that's actually studied speleology, the study of caves, not just in the caves, but also the technical chemistry, understands that that doesn't make any sense at all. That has nothing to do with it. Time is irrelevant. It doesn't take time. It takes the right chemical and physical conditions. Did you have the right chemical and physical conditions? So here's the truth. This is actually out of my book. Science, however, tells us a very different scenario. The drip rate, the saturation of the solution, the temperature of the solution, the surrounding air, the carbon dioxide concentration in the air, and other factors all affect how quickly or slowly a stalactite will grow. The simplistic formula for stalactite growth, 1,000 years equals 1 centimeter, repeated incessantly on public cave tours, is simply not scientific. And if you read one of the textbooks, which is being used in universities, especially in the United States, they know that that's not the case. They know that what you're being told in public cave tours is not right. It's not correct. Rock layers. Because remember, I'm saying the rock layers were laid down, most of them, during Noah's flood, at least the ones where the caves are involved in. And they're saying, no, it took millions of years, tens of millions of years, hundreds of millions of years. So how do we know? Well, we can do some science, and we'll get there in a few seconds here. July 29th, 2008, here I am doing research at Kachina Bridge near Blanding, Utah. And I went back in 2011 because the atheists wrote an article, and they were making claims in that article. I said, well, let's go back. I've already been there. Let's take the photographs, and I'll do everything we need to do. And I carried a ladder on my back. Well, a telescoping ladder, right? Because they're saying you can't get a ladder down there. I'm just like, bet you I can. And so I put it on my back with my backpack. Sure, my back hurt for a couple days and probably complained to my wife. But guess what? I got a ladder down there, and I got up under this ledge. That's basically looking at artwork indicating that people and dinosaurs lived together. But there's something else interesting here when I came back in 2011. Did you catch it? Many people look, not many people see. This layer was not there in 2008. Don't believe me? Let me go back. Okay, take a close look. That sand layer was not there in 2008. Now it is. And it's actually a pretty significant layer laminated. All these different layers in here. And so this is where the sand layer was in 2011. This picture's from 2008. And here in 2011, there was the ladder that could not be brought down, okay? Because they said, well, we couldn't get up on the ledge to do close inspection, so we used binoculars to do our close-up inspection. Hold on a second. Binoculars, by definition, mean you were a distance away, right? Let's just get up on there. So that's the other book, Dire Dragons. But anyway, and here we are. Here's my buddy who came with me in 2011, and he's 6'3". He's already standing on part of the sand that was not there previously. And I was talking to him, and I said, you know, this was not here 3 years ago. And a guy came around the corner from this way and was walking this way, and you can actually see his legs here. And he said, I suppose you have a picture to prove that. And I looked at him, I said, well, matter of fact, I do. This wasn't here. These layers weren't here 3 years before. So what happened? Probably one single flash flood came through here, deposited all of those layers. Let's take a look at those layers. And so here I am kneeling next to them, and you can see microfine laminations. And you can see dark layers, which are vegetation, and here's even a pine cone, light layers. And so when you go to the Green River Formation, they say you can add these up to a year. They're varves. They're seasonal deposits. And so one might think, well, you know, here we had, summer, and then we had fall and spring runoff, and that's why we have this vegetation in here. You can start adding up to a year, and you end up with thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of years worth of accumulation, except we have photographic evidence that it wasn't there 3 years before. So here are the ones in the Green River Formation. You add up a light and a dark, and that's a year. Light and dark, and say, look, millions of years. No, all you know is you have millions of microfine laminations, not necessarily millions of years. Well, that sand I showed you is not solidified. It's not lithified. It doesn't take millions of years to lithify sand and things into rock. And the answer is no. This is an N14Y Champion spark plug. And it was produced from the 50s or so. It was found on Apollo Beach, Florida, between October and December 1996. And the sand grains are cemented together. You might say, well, that looks like rust. It definitely does look like rust, except we analyzed it with a sophisticated technique known as X-ray diffractometry, or just abbreviated XRD. And there's actually not a lot of iron in there at all. And the main binding agent is a calcium carbonate, like you find in caves. But also like you find in the rocks of the earth. And so it doesn't take a long time to cement those grains together. And during the flood, when you had all of this water coming up, you already had mineralized water there ready to cement these layers together. Does it take millions of years to form limestone? Here is the ink. You're actually seeing the reverse of it because the paper's gone from a U.S. $1 bill. By 1957, they had put "In God We Trust" on the dollar bills. And I know it's a real small screen, but there's an S and a T, which are upside down and backwards there, from "In God We Trust." And by the dictionary definition, geologic dictionary definition, this is limestone. You might call it travertine, but it's still technically limestone. So there's a dollar bill in limestone. It doesn't take a long time. We were on a holiday. Went to the truck. My wife carries the money, okay, maybe smart with me, because I'm probably going to want to buy something. And this was on display. And I said, would you be interested in selling that? And they said, well, we've had a lot of offers. What's your best offer? So I gave him an offer. He said, well, just a second, I got to talk to the owner. And the owner came, and basically he was boxing it up for me. And my wife was quite distraught because I paid more than a dollar for it, okay? Anyway, good memories. Not so good for on her side, but there it is, a close-up. And so the paper from the dollar bill is actually gone, and there you can see part of the S and T from "In God We Trust." So it basically formed after 1957. The worldwide flood would have laid down vast layers of sediment, which would have then turned into sedimentary rock, a lot of them. And so we look at the Grand Canyon, lots of layers, but not lots of time. Can caverns be millions of years old? And I said I was going to address this. What about those layers? What about the millions of years? Well, let's take a look at the fossils in those layers. And some of these fossils can be carbon-14 dated. Okay, I don't emphasize the dated part, but what we're looking for is original carbon-14. Because it's radioactive and it decays. And so if you have any original carbon-14, according to the evolutionary paradigm, the old Earth paradigm, there's no way those fossils could be millions of years old. Theoretically, they say upper limit with the equipment we have, 100,000 years, and realistically 60,000 years, and those are radiocarbon years, not real calendar years, okay? Anyway, The point is, if you ever find original carbon 14, it's impossible that they could be millions of years old. So here's a toe bone, which looked quite nice before I broke it in half and took samples out of the center. And it's from an Edmontosaurus, and it actually doesn't look very old. It looks fairly fresh, which is kind of typical. Most people are unaware of up in Alaska, or whether in Alberta, or whether here in the United States. A lot of these bones look pretty fresh. So what happens? Well, we send it away. We don't tell them it's dinosaur bone. We say, is there any carbon-14? And the answer is yes. Now, this is 32,000 radiocarbon years, not equal to calendar years. But here's the point. If you find original carbon-14, which there was, it indicates it's thousands of years, cannot be millions of years. And we did test after test all the way from the bottom of the geologic column to the top. Here's an interesting one. Richard Spur, Oklahoma. They claim that this creature that we dated is 280 million years old. Now, this is important because they point to the layers. And they say it's that old. Why? Because it has these fossils in. But wait a minute, we're looking at the fossils and we're sending them away and we're finding carbon-14, which means they cannot be millions of years old. So this is Captorhinus agouti. And this particular specimen sits in my office and my kids started calling him the captain anyway. No idea. But we didn't date him because he's got glue on, he's got shellac on. You can't do that because it'll mess everything up. And so no problem, we just used vertebrae from his buddies. Vertebra is singular. Vertebrae is plural. A lot of people mix that up. And what happens? Carbon-14, yes. Thousands of years. Cannot be millions of years. In fact, when you look at the geologic column, let me just go back for a sec. So some people say, well, that's a time scale. Well, the reality is we find carbon-14 in fossils from here, 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 all the way up, and roughly the same amount of carbon-14, which indicates that all of these creatures in the so-called geologic column died at the same time, and they were buried at the same time, which was thousands of years ago. What kind of event could you have that would kill, bury billions of different creatures all over the world only thousands of years ago? That's an interesting question because the early founding fathers of geology were mainly Anglican clergymen, and they believed that most of the fossils, most, not all, most of the fossils formed during Noah's flood. What about the dating of cavern formations? I don't know if you're familiar with this, but they take stalagmites and they claim that they could date those. And they say hundreds of thousands of years old. So I thought, well, if I'm going to write a book on this, I better look into this in detail and I better figure out what the answer is. Because the fossils indicate this thousands of years. So there's no way that these which came after can be hundreds of thousands. So it's called the uranium-234 to thorium-230 method. Here are the assumptions. Assumptions are key. Radioactive uranium-234 is soluble in water, and as such, it incorporates itself into the calcite lattice, into the structure of these cave formations. Then we have thorium. Thorium isotopes are insoluble in water, so they're not found originally, this is the assumption, not found originally in the stalactites, stalagmites, etc., and are in clays and iron oxides. If thorium isotopes are found in calcite, they should be from the radioactive decay of uranium-234. And they say, oh, well, the decay rate is approximately this. We have the original uranium-234, and now we have thorium, so it's been here for X number of years. However, if only it was that simple for the older side. Secular speleological expert Dr. Miriam Bar-Matthews from the Geological Survey of Israel points out there are problems with the underlying assumptions, okay? In many, many speleothems, that's just a technical word for cave formations. In many, many speleothems, we do have thorium incorporated with some detrital material. Now, she's talking right at the beginning, you have thorium. Uh-oh. When we do dating, we have to take this into account and correct for the contribution of thorium. How do you correct? How do you know how much was there? How much was there in the beginning? How much came from? You don't. Assuming. That's really what it is. Assuming, that, and I added that for a specific reason, assuming that it's not associated with the decay of uranium-234 problems. problems. Let me give you another quote, and this is from this book here, which is a textbook on caves, one of the leading textbooks in the world. Baker and Fairchild, the authors, experts on caverns, say this, quote, although this can be corrected, they're saying, we have this problem, but it can be corrected. It is not always known which thorium-230 and thorium-232 ratio to use for the correction. And so errors can be much larger and the data can display age reversals. Let me translate that for you. The correction method can lead to great errors, so much so that the final dates which result may not agree with the previous dates and or preconceptions held to by older scientists. You have to believe in hundreds of thousands of years for the cave formations. We have a dating method, which doesn't work, by the way. Cavern-like formations on man-made structures. Now, imagine if you found caverns, you know, stalactites and stalagmites and flowstone on man-made structures. That would indicate that it has to have happened very quickly. Just going to show you one example here. I could go on literally for 2 hours. This was kind of 20 years of research just on this aspect. Dulles Hill Paddock Bunka. Okay, anybody know who was in charge of that during World War II? Okay, Sir Winston Churchill. And so we were able to take a private tour through this bunker. And on street level, you wouldn't even know it's there. This is the door. And they built housing on here about 1995, and that disturbed the soil quite a bit, and a lot more water started to pour into the bunker after that. And so most of the formations we're going to look at are less than 20 years, okay? Now here we are, and you can start to see some of the formations, and I'm not going to show you a bunch. We were down there for a couple hours, but notice the brush, okay? Stalagmites, and we know that those are calcite. Calcium carbonate in the form of calcite, just like in the caves. And here we see more examples. And here's another example here. It doesn't take a long time. It takes the right chemical and physical conditions to form these cave formations. Now, the chemistry on this is slightly different. So here's the actual chemistry. So carbonic acid, this is for the formation, not for the forming of the cavern. So you have water and carbon dioxide. Forms H2CO3, carbonic acid. And so that seeps into the limestone, the dolomite starts to basically dissolve it, and you end up with calcium and bicarbonate ion formation. So here you have the calcium ions and the bicarbonate. And then basically what happens is these combine once you get to the openings in the caves, you end up with calcium carbonate, limestone, calcite, aragonite, it's all the same, plus water, plus carbon dioxide. So the carbon dioxide that went in here comes back out, and so that's why you have to monitor in some of these caves the carbon dioxide levels. What about concrete versus limestone? Let me let Gary Smith explain. He's a skeptic. He's an old earther. He doesn't like Christians. He doesn't like creation. Here's what he says. When you start with concrete, as time passes, the available calcium hydroxide will leach from the cement paste along the seepage path, and the pH will fall even further. If the pH falls below pH of 9, carbonic acid, just like in the caves, will start to appear, and the chemical reaction will change to a similar process to that which occurs in limestone caves. And so what he's saying is, given enough time, under the correct conditions, we can end up with cave chemistry on concrete. Though the exact time of this process differs, those who know and are familiar with concrete know it will occur. So let me show you an example of this. Chirk Tunnel, Wales, was completed November 25th, 1801, and they used concrete mortar, okay? Cement, you know, we have common words that aren't necessarily technically correct, but nevertheless, here it is. So inside this long tunnel, you'll notice... Okay, so there you go, pretty long. You notice these cave formations forming. Here we have ribbons. And I was in Saskatchewan, and it was 3 o'clock in the morning, and I get a message from my buddy from Australia, and he says he's over in England, and they found these, and he sent pictures. And I think the literal the literal quote was, "Eat your heart out, Nelson." And I said, "John, I said, have you tested the pH of these?" I said, "It's very important." He said, "Oh, I've got the flu, and now you want me to go get a pH meter and all that?" Well, anyway, he did. He went and got a pH meter, and they tested the drip water. This is very, very important. This is on concrete, basically, right? So in between the bricks is concrete. And lo and behold, what is the pH of the drip water? 8.2 to 8.9. Caverns are 6.6 to 9.5. So now we're dealing with the same chemistry forming on man-made structures as in caves. I've tested the drip water on concrete all over the world, and often what you'll get is 10 to 13 for pH. This is indicating it's changed. It's changed over time. Nevertheless, mines and industry. Sterling Hill Mine in Ogdensburg, New Jersey. I've been there a few times. And here is the original Sterling Mill in 1915. And so they're actually taking the material, and their main focus is the zinc. And so it's marble, which is kind of heated limestone, and they're pulling zinc out of it. Other stuff too, but mainly zinc. And so here you can go, and we go on this little tour. Well, this is underwater now, so this I had to pull these out of the archives. And you'll see these stalactites, stalagmites, flowstone forming in the same way as they form in caves, because this is all basically limestone. It's heated limestone. It's the same chemical formula as limestone caves. And it didn't take dozens of years. It took about 20 years for all of these things to form. Not lots of time. Lots of water, lots of minerals, but not lots of time. And so here in Carlsbad, they used to say that New Mexico's unfinished symphony was started 250 million years ago. Of course, they know that's not true anymore. And these are massive structures. But if you calculate how much calcite can grow today in natural caves, such as over in Europe that I've tested, no problem getting Carlsbad Caverns since the time of the flood. And here is Ogdensburg, New Jersey, Sterling Hill Mine on the right-hand side. Smaller, but still the same type of formations. And here we can see even growing on the chains that were left in there. This is Sterling Hill Mine, Ogdensburg, New Jersey. Some of these formations are spectacular. These are about 3 feet long, and you have a bunch of stalagmites. So these are complex structures. They're not just soda straws. 20 years or so. Mineral springs. Karlovy Vary in the Czech Republic. They've now named it Chechia. And I talked to my PhD friend there. I said, "Is it Chechia or is it Czech Republic?" No, Czech Republic. It's Czech Republic, not Chechia. Anyway, public opinion doesn't always mean much. But here, it's a beautiful town, and I'd been wanting to go there for a long time, took these photos while we were there. And they have mineral spring water, comes out of the ground. And here you can see, this was early in the morning, you could see the steam coming, because underneath here is where they have what they call, what I call, petrifying rooms. And so they basically take articles, as we'll see, and they put them in the water for a few weeks. So here I am on the way down. It was actually quite a chore to figure out who to talk to and how to get access to this. But as my wife says, I can be a little stubborn. So I know none of you would be stubborn, right? And as you walk through here, I mean, this is a these are bricks that they made this pathway underneath the street, and you can see beautiful calcite formations, just like in the caves. And we walk a little further, and this one here formed in around 70 years. Water kept trickling out of there, and it doesn't take a long time. It takes the right chemical and physical conditions. Lots of water, lots of minerals, but not lots of time. And they hang these paper roses, and they let the water flow over top, and in 2 weeks they sell to the tourists, and they end up with a coat of aragonite. So aragonite is just a different crystal form from what you typically see in the caves. You can see aragonite in caves too. And so there they are 2 weeks later, and we do have some of these for sale if you're interested. Pipes. And so these were the pipes that were under taking water to various places in Karlovy Vary. They used to have 16 springs, so you could go fill up your cup and drink it, you know, and it healed everything. I drank a couple sips just so I said I could say I did it. But just like the stuff in Bath, England, or Bath, as they say, it all tastes basically the same. Not real great. Not really, really good. And so here's one of the pipes. So they were under the streets for up to 80 years. And a guy that I know in the Czech Republic bought them all, put them on the backs of semis, and hauled them pretty much into no man's land and dropped them in the bush. And his buddy is a rock hound, and so he cuts and polishes these. Hot Springs State Park in Thermopolis, Wyoming. In 1903, they stuck a pipe. There was water coming out. They stuck a pipe into the ground, and then they eventually built this teepee shape around it out of rocks and let the water flow over top, and it's called Teepee Fountain. And so here it is in 1917. They had a straight pipe, and so they decided, well, we should cover that in. So you can see here, 1917, 18, they covered that in, and here it is today. And so when you see massive mounds in caves, it doesn't necessarily mean lots of time. It means lots of water, lots of minerals, which would have been excessive right after Noah's flood to about 500 years after the flood, which would have been the peak of what I like to call the ice event. Starting of the ice event, peak about 700 years. And then desertification started to set in all around the world. And so places that used to be able to have, you know, take care of food-wise, gigantic creatures, which is one of my books, they started to die out. And a lot of the caves didn't have the moisture and the water that they once had after that point. Nevertheless, 1903, and it is calcite, just exactly the same as in the caves. Structure started in 1903, so on and so forth. It's just a sign there telling you what actually happened. The Petrifying Fountain in Saint-Nectaire, France. And so this is kind of looking up above. You drive in and then you kind of drive down into the village of Saint-Nectaire or town of Saint-Nectaire. It's very beautiful place. But this is the location of Fontaine Petrifiante, or the Petrifying Fountain. And this was started by the Papon family in 1801, and it's still being run by the same family today. And they just kept expanding. Well, this mineral water comes in. Here you can see where it comes in. And then they direct it. And you'll notice, well, you know, they take these stuffed animals and they just let the stuff drip on them. And he's got stalagmites growing on his back now. But they direct the water and they filter it with wood shavings here. And then eventually it comes down to, there you can see, oh, it's really loud over there. Right, he's probably competing. Anyway, they get directed to what seems to be a set of stairs, and the water goes over, and they have these molds, and they set the molds, and they turn them every so often, and after 8 to 12 months, they're done, and they take them out, and they sell them in the gift shop, and it's beautiful calcite. Doesn't take a long time, just takes lots of water, lots of minerals, not lots of time. We do have a couple of these, actually, for sale at the book table as well, if you're interested. And so they used gutta percha, was the predecessor of plastic, to make the molds. Then they put them in, then they would heat the gutta percha, pull it off, and clean up the edges and sell these plaques, which look like ivory. That was kind of the idea. It looks like ivory, right? But it's calcite, just like you find in caves. Well, when you enter Fontaine Petrifiante in Saint-Nectaire, France, you'll be met by this dog. And the story goes, in 1960s, I think it's 1963, but I'd need to double-check that, the owner loved his dog so much that he had it mounted, taxidermy, and then took it, and people would do this. They would have their pets coated, you know, and then he could be with you forever kind of thing, right? And the owner never came back. They left it in for 3 years, and it's almost like the dog's waiting for the owner to come back. He still hasn't come back for him. Anyway, I don't think he will now. Man-carved and natural caverns. And so this is, when I say man-carved, I basically mean that we have limestone, and they're making rooms in the limestone. And then since that time, the water started to percolate in, just like we see in caves. So let's take a look at this. The Petrifying Cave in True, France. You ever heard of the troglodytes? Okay, so these were the troglodytes that lived in caves that they carved out of the limestone mountain. And so I took this picture kind of overseeing the town. It was a steep, because that's all the limestone building up on the mountain here. But we were down at the bottom level where they had made this cave. And sometimes they stored wine and sometimes they lived in it. Well, this one was so wet that calcite started to build up, cave formations. This is the petrifying trough. Okay, so they would put things in here. They turn it every so often. And I suspect back in the day they would sell it to the tourists. But today they're just basically showing you how this worked. And so here is 1908 about. And here you can see a baptismal, you know, kind of like the Catholic version where you just dip. And a baptismal looks like a bird bath, but it's pretty big. There's 1908, and it was put in the 1800s, and I think they were cleaning it, and then they stopped cleaning it, and here's what we have today. It's actually quite spectacular, and it hasn't taken a long period of time to form. Lots of water, lots of minerals, but not lots of time. The petrifying caves in Savonnières, another location in France. I spent a lot of time in France. Now, this building is still there. It looks just like that. Even though this picture goes back to the early 20th century. And this is where you go in to get your ticket to go through the tour. And you can see old Roman quarries. I'm not going to discuss that today. And then the caves, the natural cave in there. And so here we can see here some of the formations in the cave itself. And here they're doing the same thing. They're setting plaques in here. They're setting ceramics. And just letting the natural mineral water drip on it. And within a year to 3 years, they pull them out and they're in their gift shop. It doesn't take a long time to grow a thick layer of calcite. Some of these are underneath the water, some of them are not. And they have to turn them every so often, otherwise they'll basically adhere themselves together from the mineral deposits. So that's exactly what this happens. They turn it every 12 to 16 days or something, and sometimes they're too slow. And you end up with two of these glued together by the calcite. Here's one that was underneath the water, and you end up with beautiful calcite crystals when they're underneath the water. And here you can see, again, dripping onto these molds, just happening completely naturally. It takes maybe 12 months up to 2 years to get a centimeter. So you start doing those calculations, and it's quite interesting. I bought this one. The first time I was in France, and I hauled it around everywhere in France, and it was pretty heavy. It was kind of a pain, but nevertheless, I did get it home. So now I ship stuff if I go somewhere, make sure I pack it. And here we have over an inch in 3 years. Well, you start doing the calculations, 500 feet. Let me just back that up. So at this known rate in this particular cave, how many feet of calcite could you get? Well, you could get 500 feet of calcite in 1,600 years. What could you do if you multiplied that by 3, which is closer to back to the time of the flood? Could you get Carlsbad Caverns? 100%. You just need lots of water and lots of minerals. And right after the flood, it would have been more hot, more humid. Florida would have been hotter and humid. Various other areas would have been more hot and humid. This is around 1909 when I went through here. I showed the guide this picture, and I didn't know. You can see that they actually set up wood here, shelves, to set things on. That's 1909. Here it is when I was there in 2018. They don't even know these are shelves anymore if they don't do their research, right? Punkva Caves, Czech Republic. So we're going on this cave tour, and it's a vast cave system, and there are many others. And we had a day off. So what do we do on our day off when we're researching caves? We go see other caves, okay? Anyway, we end up going through here, supposedly discovered 1909 to 1914. Okay, so think about that, 1909 to 1914. And I'm walking through the caves. I'm always the last guy. We actually lost our group. We ended up with another group, and then we took little boats out. And I'm like, okay, well, we got out. That was the main thing. And some beautiful, this is absolutely spectacular when you see it in life. Just like a sheet all curled up. And many people look, not many people see. Lady in front of me, she turned like this, took a picture. I'm like, oh, I'll take a picture too. You know, take a picture too. And I looked later and I'm like, okay, interesting. These stalactites have been broke off. Okay, so this was discovered about 100 years ago. And since then, they've started to grow their tips back over a centimeter, which is kind of significant. They say it takes 1,000 years to grow 1 centimeter. Hold on a second. This was 100 years. Then you find out that other caves understand that. Calcite encased ladder in Hrudický in the Czech Republic. This is a picture of the town, and my graphic designer said, "That's a horrible picture. We got to find another picture." I said, "You're going to find a picture of Hrudický?" And there is no pictures available. I said, "That's why I took that picture." He said, "Oh, we're going to have to use that picture?" He says, "Terrible." I said, "Well, look, that's the picture we're going to have to use for the book." Anyway, so we ended up with a guy by the name of Roman. And what you're supposed to have 8 hours of training before you go into these caves. It's not public caves. And he looked at myself and my friend. He said, "You guys look in pretty good shape." I said, "Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah." He said, "We don't need to do 8 hours of training. Let's just go down." I said, "Okay." So 500 feet straight down. This is just one of the very first ladder systems from the bottom to the top. And I couldn't even get it all in my frame. I didn't have wide angle with me. And it's slippery. And I made the mistake of taking leather gloves. What happens to leather when it gets wet, right? And so it was a tough haul. Actually, one of the hardest things I ever did is crawl back out of there with all the stuff on my back, other than coming out of the Amazon a few years before that. Nevertheless, we get out, and we're not quite out, and I have these overalls on. I take them down to here, and he said, "Whoa, we're not out of the cave system yet." So I understand. I said, "But I don't want to repeat of Amazonas 2012, okay, where I pretty much overheated." Didn't, but close. So here we are, all the way down, 500 feet down. There's nobody else in there. There are no lights. There's nothing fancy. And so I snapped a couple pictures there to give an idea. In 1922, a guy went all the way down there. That blows my mind. That ladder system wasn't there in 1902, and it was hard enough to deal with that. Put my shoulder up for an entire year, and my wife was not happy. She had to do everything for me. And so here's a ladder he left down there in 1922. This picture was taken circa 1950. Here it is today. It's a natural cave, just a normal cave. And this thing is just completely encased in calcite. Does it take long periods of time to form this stuff? No, it doesn't. And I crawled all the way down there, wrecked my arm for an entire year to show people it doesn't take a long time. It takes lots of water, lots of minerals, not lots of time. And so I had to bring my own lights and everything and set up and photograph this. So it's amazing all the things that were taught that aren't true. That aren't true at all. I'm going to stop with this one because this really still amazes me. Here we are in Mexico, and a lot of the Mayans would go down into the caves. Well, they thought the caves were the gateway to the underworld. Very dark religious beliefs, of course. But they figured out that, hey, if we're going to come down here, let's bring some vessels and we'll catch water as a stalactite strip because we don't have to carry water every time we go down here. And they took artifacts and things like that. This is originally from Tabasco, Mexico. And so here's an artifact the Mayans left down in the cave about 900 years ago, and it was absolutely encased. So the archaeologists start, you know, cleaning it up, and they get to a point, and it's just like, that's it. No more. Too hard. It doesn't take a long time. Totally natural caves. Conclusions. When we start with the biblical history, the biblical record, the biblical time frame, what we see in God's world agrees with what we read in God's word. Exodus 20:11, 6 days, the Lord made heavens and the earth and sea and all that in them is. And you can start putting chronologies together based on the Bible, based on secular history, some of these key points. And you end up with around 6,000 years, not millions and billions of years. God creates everything in 6 days. Then there was a worldwide flood. And after the flood, I believe most of these cave formations formed shortly after the flood. Some are still forming today. So they would have formed in the last 4,400 years, give or take. The worldwide flood would have laid down thousands of feet of layers around the world. And during the flood, at the end of the flood, we talked about the possibility for these caverns to actually start forming before the flood's even done. It doesn't take a long time to form layers, and it doesn't take a long time to turn those layers into solid rock. There was hotter, more humid climate early post-flood in many areas of the earth, which would have contributed to quick and massive growth of calcite. And there are many places, as we showed here around the world, where it's still happening, even though it's not as hot and humid as it was right after Noah's flood. It doesn't take lots of time. It takes lots of water, lots of minerals to make these formations. Revisions at Carlsbad. This is from Jerry Trout, cave specialist with the Forest Service. He said this, from 1924 to 1988, there was a visitor sign above the entrance to Carlsbad Caverns that said Carlsbad was at least 260 million years old. In 1988, the sign was changed to read 7 to 10 million years old. Then for a little while, the sign read that it was 2 million years old. Now the sign is gone. It's growing on the wires. It's, you know, maybe we should take the sign down. Resources. So here this weekend, we have four main books. Working on another book called Banished from Babel, Evidence for the Tower of Babel Dispersion, which is going to be pretty spectacular. But nevertheless, we have dire dragons. And so if people and dinosaurs live together at the same time, where is the evidence? There should be evidence all over the world that people saw them and maybe depicted them. Well, that's dire dragons, depictions from all over the world, old depictions, ancient depictions, showing that people must have seen them to accurately draw them. And in some cases, it's claw for claw, scale for scale, tooth for tooth. And so there are many examples in that book. That's what that book's about. Dinosaurs and people live together. If they're made in the same day of creation, so on and so forth. What would the evidence be? Let's go take a look. Then we have monumental monsters. And so these are 35 gigantic creatures found in the fossil record with their closest living counterparts, showing that things have gone from good to bad to worse to Winnipeg, Manitoba. Downhill, not uphill, just like the Bible would predict. And that's these are the boys especially, but children, this is kind of the top two books because it's animals. They like things that are animals like that. Caves, so that's, we talked a little bit about that today. And then there's flood fossils, which is kind of three books in one. The first section talks about Noah's Ark. What did it look like? How do we know? Could it have survived until recently? Did it survive until recently? Section number one, Noah's Ark. Section number two deals with the rocks and fossils, showing that they formed rapidly and recently under watery conditions and evidence like we looked at, carbon-14 and things like that. And then section three is fast fossils, showing how quickly fossilization can actually occur. Flood fossils. Now, these are normally $45 at the conference, $37.50. If you want to get the entire set, normally $180, $55 off, $125 plus 5%. And I used to say for Trudeau, but now I guess I'm going to have to say for Carney, and we'll see what happens there. Roses, not cheap. I actually bought the last 20 they made of these style here. $95, that's actually a sale. These are a couple $100. The calcite plaques. There's our website, book site, untoldsecretsofplanetearth.com, and our ministry, creationtruthministries.org. All right. That's all I have. Any quick questions? We got like 1 or 2 minutes. Any questions? Okay. Time for lunch, right? All right. Thank you very much.
Once again, the Manitoba Association of Christian Homeschools would like to thank the Learning House for sponsoring this recording. Please visit them at learninghouse.ca.